Blog Talk Radio.
When I dropped out of college, they said I'd never make it. Called me uneducated, but a book can't teach you how to get up off that pavement. I was down, almost out, but I found a way in. Was writing away my pain, running away with the same thing that I was enslaved with, this game. Praying that I could change it, over hopeful though my flows was cold as your noses in Nova Scotia, growing closer due to low exposure to these hoes and posers. Rolling Doja for closure, whipping white girls, but I ain't talking about the Yola. I ain't cooking with the soda, voices in my head, so don't think about getting older, cause martyrs never make it. But baby, I'm a soldier, staying putting pressure on my shoulders, wanting to see me fall, but the hand of God came and moved the boulder. Before it's all over, you will know me as a lyricist, composer with a serious composure, supernova. I put myself up, I let my light shine. If you don't see it too, then you ain't in your right mind. I let my soul glow for the whole globe. I illuminate the places that they don't go. I put myself up, I let my light shine. Now I'm like a supernova in the nighttime. I let my soul glow, so all you hoes can blow me. If you wasn't here before the shit popped, then you don't know me. I be on Twitter listening to random niggas claiming to be banging spitters. Most of them ain't hanging with us. We both aim for fame. The difference is you win, it's for the recognition. Bitch, I know I'm recognizing. You was just desperate for attention like a little kid. Bars as simple as it gets, no sign of intelligence. Rhymes about irrelevance, but elephants are in the room. You can't ignore the smell of us. Your bitch is telling us, trying to behold our benevolence.
I put myself up, I let my light shine. If you don't see it too, then you ain't in your right mind. I let my soul glow for the whole globe. I illuminate the places that they don't go. I put myself up, I let my light shine. Now I'm like a supernova in the nighttime. I let my soul glow, so all you hoes can blow me. If you wasn't here before the shit popped, then you don't know me.
Supernova, my shining is undeniable. The other side of the pillow spoke and told me that I was cool. Then the microwave asked me to warm some pizza up and said it shouldn't take me long the way that I be eating up. And that was weird, then I got charged up by my PlayStation. Said I had too much game, nigga was straight hating. And when I tried to leave, Mr. Clean asked me how my spit was killing 99% of germs like Listerine.
I put myself up, I let my light shine. If you don't see it too, then you ain't in your right mind. I let my soul glow for the whole globe. I illuminate the places that they don't go. I put myself up, I let my light shine. Now I'm like a supernova in the nighttime. I let my soul glow, so all you hoes can blow me. If you wasn't here before the shit popped, then you don't know me. I put myself up, I let my light shine. If you don't see it too, then you ain't in your right mind. I let my soul glow for the whole globe.
Live from Team Dirty Nebula, I am your host, Dr. William Stewart Bonney. That is Supernova by Reggie Waldo. As of Earth Records released their phone app this weekend. It's only available for Android right now, but it's a whole bunch of underground artists. You can go, they've got the links to figure out where these people are on the internet. It's a really, really cool thing for DIY artists, and like anybody can submit to it. Doesn't matter what your platform is, the art form, mostly looking for music and stuff, but you know, they're going to be featuring some of my writing. But speaking of writing, tonight we have Mr. Frankie Metro from Albuquerque, New Mexico. He is the co-captain of Clefjaw Press, Clefjaw Magazine. Clefjaw is a multifaceted, amazing thing. They're the first people to give myself a chance. How are you tonight, Frankie?
I'm all right. To be honest with you, like I told you earlier, like I completely spaced out and forgot all about the fact that I was going to be interviewed today. And I was like, I was sitting here and I was editing a book, Bondage Night at Darling Cara's, which will be out later on this year, hopefully, by Gabriel Ricard. And I wanted a drink, and I'm kind of thirsty right now. I got to be honest with you. You ask me how I'm doing, I'm thirsty. That's it.
Well,
yeah.
I'm not going to take up too much of your time so you can go get a beer, but I do
No, that's
want...
cool, man. I don't give a shit. I'll hang out with you. Fuck it. I'll smoke some weed, though. Is that cool?
Oh, dude, that is encouraged, and I hope all of our listeners are toking up if that is their preference, if, you know,
okay.
whatever your preference may be. So, yeah, go ahead. Smoke away. I'll probably be smoking as well.
Nope.
First off, how have you been, sir?
I'm, like, super fucking nervous right now. I'm getting ready to move to, like, Alaska for 3 months. And I'm, like, super fucking nervous about that shit because it's, like, a complete polar opposite of where I'm at right now. And, like, literally, it's a polar opposite, you know. And,
yeah.
Well, not literally, I guess. I guess that would be, like, Antarctica
well,
or some
I,
shit.
Well, I mean,
but.
It's pretty cool. It's pretty damn close. Albuquerque, New Mexico is nothing like... where are you moving exactly in Alaska? What's the name of the place?
It's called Naknek, Alaska, which I think that's how you pronounce it. It's a derivative of, like, an old Yuki Indian term, which was later butchered by some Russian sailors, basically. And, like, these Russians came in and, I don't know, basically went all commie on the town. Is that, can I say commie and Russians in the same thing? Like, the Cold War started all over again, right? So I can say that.
Yeah, no.
Right now. Right?
Yeah, I think,
yeah.
no, that's,
okay.
totally, that's totally acceptable. Totally acceptable.
Right.
I pretty much encourage anybody to talk how they normally talk here on this show because, you know, why not? Be yourself.
Right, right. But I guess
yeah.
it's like a big Russian, like, there's a big Russian population, there's, like, a huge Yuki Indian population there, and it's, like, 2% black and, like, 0.06% mixed race, so, like, I fall into that little category, and I'm looking forward to the culture shock, I guess, which, yeah.
Absolutely, man. That's going to be a really just interesting 3 months. I mean, I can't even really imagine. You know what I mean? Like, that's,
right.
I've never been to Alaska, first off. And Alaska is very interesting to me because it's only been a part of the United States for, what, like 70 years, something like that?
Yeah, something like that.
And
yeah.
And pretty much all we've done is, you know, mine and fish. And that's been great for the economy, you know, for a lot of people to be able to go out there like yourself and do things. But I just, I can't really, like, fathom what kind of a place it is, you know what I mean, what kind of culture it is, because it is so many, it's Canada, but it's also practically Russia, you know, like, it's practically everything, and that's fucking
yeah.
cool, but, yeah, nerve-wracking, I can only fucking imagine, like, that's, yeah.
Yeah, huh. I think, like, the population there is, like, something like 800 people. Regularly, and then you have somewhere between like 10 and 15,000 people that come in during like the salmon season, which is when I'm going, and they'll like work there and live in like bunk houses and shit like that. And you know where you're at, you can go on like Wikipedia right now and just type in Naknek, Alaska, and it pulls up a little picture of it in the summer, and it's like a picture of downtown Naknek, which is like literally like 6 houses. And from what I can tell, like, a bar on a hill. And it looks like rural Kentucky. Like, I got to be honest with you. Like, I thought it was, like, Kentucky in the wintertime is what I thought. So, it's weird.
Whoa.
Yeah.
That is very, very weird.
Right.
Man, that's going to be, like, I think the only thing as a writer I can say is that's going to be one hell of a story. Because it is.
Yeah.
I mean, like, it's one of those, like, you know, I know you. I've known you for a couple years. And, like, that doesn't surprise me. But, like, I know that I understand why you're doing this, too. So, like, this is, man, like, it's good that you, I'm so glad you have an end date. You know what I mean? Like, something that you
right.
can, like, focus on to, like, get through that. Because, like, man, you're a strong-willed motherfucker, and I know that for a fact, but, like, even that would test, like, and I feel like I'm a pretty strong-willed motherfucker, but I don't know if I could do something like that, like, you know, go out there and fucking really put the nose to the grind in such a culture shock. But, mm-hmm. I have utmost faith in you.
Thanks, man.
And I understand why you're nervous, too. It's like, fuck,
it really is.
For you, man. Yeah.
It's fucking nerve-wracking, dude. It kind of is. A lot of it has to do with the fact that I'm leaving my wife behind for 3 months. And, you know, we've been married for 3 years now, and, there's probably been, 3 days out of that entire 3 years where we haven't been together, you know. And, I mean, anybody that knows me and Lindsay know that, we work really closely together. We work with each other at the hostel. We work on Clefjaw. We work, on artwork together. We're a really tight-knit group, or unit, I guess is what you would say. But,
y'all have a magnetic...
Just leaving her behind and... Yeah. I mean, it's just a trip, man. Before I married her, I literally had never even thought about getting married. That wasn't me. I wasn't that type of guy. I knew I was going to, die at, 60, and I was going to be by myself, and that was it. It was going to be, a fiery car crash, and I was going to be high on, coke and all sorts of shit, and I was going to fucking really go out with a bang, only it was going to be, a bunch of years later, and that didn't happen. So... And then, I, of course, at this point in my life, I'm well past, the whole 27 club bullshit, so just to have somebody there that, kind of completes the whole rock and roll fantasy for me in a way that Lindsay does, because she is goddamn, I don't know, she's, literally, fire on wheels, dude, sometimes, and it just keeps things exciting, and it keeps my life progressing, and it makes me stronger and a little bit more resolute in, decisions like this, to be honest with you, because I know that, in the long run, it's going to be something that's going to help me and my wife out, and hopefully my daughter as well, and then move forward, man. And plus, you mentioned there's an end date. There's also, an end goal, which is, basically moving to either Seattle or Portland, and that will definitely do that, so...
Cool. Yeah. Well, that's, and that's beautiful, man. To have those type goals, man. And you know me, it's very recently that I've understood how nice it is to have goals and to set goals and achieve goals. It's very, DIY Press is very fly by the seat of your pants in a lot of ways because everybody involved with it is kind of fly by the seat of your pants. At least the people that I've been able to associate with so far. And there are definitely, people who are, not fly by the seat of your pants. But that's what really attracted, me to you was your wanderlust from your younger days and your travels and just your art and both you and Lindsay do create on such this epic scale. And I'm going to throw DH in there too, Dustin Holland, just to kind of round out the Clefjaw trifecta, that.
He's a monster. That kid's a monster.
All these guys are fucking monsters. It's if you're not writing, you're painting. And if you're not painting, you're reading. And if you're not reading, you're editing. And if you're not editing, you're writing. And if you're not doing any of that, y'all are at work. Or y'all are doing that at work. Or y'all are asleep
mm-hmm.
and probably doing that in your sleep. I mean,
mm-hmm.
how many books has Clefjaw released? Yeah, I think it's 7 off the top of my head from my count. 7 in the
yeah,
past
well,
year with 4
7
issues.
Technically, yeah, 7 technically, 8 print journals because here in about a week and a half we're going to be putting out our 8th one, which is Rattled by N.J. Taylor. $7, 44 pages of poetry from pretty much one of the greatest dynasties in, poetry history, the Taylors. M.J. Taylor. If you guys are familiar with Mike Taylor, you know that, kids are got a lot of, I don't know, he's got, fucking poetry in the blood or something, man. It's crazy. But, we've got, I guess it'll be, 8 print journals, and we are currently working on our 6th online issue at the moment.
Mm-hmm. And I think, out of all of those, y'all have done probably, 70 to 80% of the artwork on all of that, too? would you say?
I would say probably about 95.9. Actually, I'd go as far as to say about 98% of the artwork on that is us.
God damn. Yeah. Yeah, damn.
Yeah.
That's the key component, because that's just, man, that's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest with you, we...
No,
I mean, it's a safe assumption. I mean, you see Dustin Holland's style, and it's, like, pretty recognizable. That kid is, like, taking the whole Jean-Michel Basquiat aesthetic and, like, flipped it on its ear and really just taken to it. And then, of course, you got Lindsay, who more than likely is the best... she's got the best technique out of all three of us as far as, like, artists. She can literally draw anything. You give her an idea, and she can draw it. Myself, to be honest with you, I feel like I'm the hack out of all three of them because I have to have references a lot more than those guys. Like, I'm more of a portrait artist than those guys are. Those guys can, like, draw stuff just right off the top of their head. I have to see people. I have to see things in order to really get, like, a grasp, like, what I want to do about it. And more than likely, it's, like, that's, like, a part of me being, like, a perfectionist in a way, I guess. Like, I really take my artwork seriously. Lindsay will give me shit about it, like, all the time and call me. She'll tell me, like, all the time, like, you're acting like a real, like, crap artist right now because, you know, I'll get all, like, sensitive and shit like that because something's not right or what have you. And then we put all three of those people together. Yeah, I mean, we just try to, like, literally anymore what we've done is before each issue, like the last two issues, we've like met up, all three of us, in Albuquerque, and I can't say a bunch of stuff. There's some things I can't say, but we'll meet up, all three of us, and like hang out and do things that artists do, you know what I'm saying, and do a bunch of artwork and go on. Yeah. And we go on, we go on these, like, marathon runs, dude, of, like, literally, like, it'll be, like, a good, well, you know, what a regular dosage would be, like, 8 to 12 hours. And during that 8 to 12-hour spurt, there's a lot of, like, last time we got together, I think we did, like, 7 to 9 paintings in a 6-hour period. So, I mean, it just comes out like that, dude. There's a certain energy when all three of us are in the room together that is, like, it transcends us being in the room together. Like, we leave... Like, Dustin will go back to Denver or whatever. We all go back to our respective spaces. And we, like, have this, like, reserve energy or whatever that we ride off of for the next fucking, like, 2 months and put these issues together. And they come out like they fucking do. And literally, man, like, sometimes I fucking see these issues and the way they come out. And it's like witnessing the birth of my kid all over again and again and again and again and again, you know? It's fucking awesome.
Yeah, that really translate too in like the crafting of each issue and how much time and dedication is put into each individual scan from our perspective, you know, which
right.
is in actuality a literal physical page that has been constructed from the ground up, you know, and that's one of those things too that I don't know if a lot of people who even read the magazine before, or zine, whatever it would be referred to as, have seen all that craft work that goes into it. Because every border for every page is hand-done. All the art,
mm-hmm.
you know, all the words are, you know, cut out and paste onto it. And that just signifies how much love and attention to detail goes into all of that. And that's just, you don't see that. You see a lot of you see a lot of graphic design, you know, which I'm very, very high on and love and all that. And that's more the aesthetic today. You don't see that DIY handcrafted. And you know, the thing too, Clefjaw has this unique every writer that is on in Clefjaw is from a different place. And pretty much every
mm-hmm.
book that you guys have released is from a different nook and cranny of the country. And that's just, that's so fucking wonderful and, like, rare. And it's like this national communal scene, you know, that was, it's kind of established through Clipjaw is its own thing, though. Like, I can't even, like, lump that in with any of the other, because of, like, how organic it has been. And, like, can you, like, I don't know if I'm explaining it to its full extent, just because, like, I don't know, whenever we all met in Albuquerque a couple years ago, right before you started Clefjaw and Dustin started Clefjaw, like, I feel like the scene was a little bit bigger and it's gotten a little bit smaller with good reason, too, you know? But it's also gotten bigger in a lot of ways because there's been more people met from other scenes incorporated. How do you do that? Mm-hmm. I think is the real way, like, to ask that. Like,
sure, that's a great question. Yeah, like, fuck, man. Can you tell me how it happens? Like, for
yeah, like,
yeah. No, like, let me put the, I'll put these into perspective for you. You know, and I think this is what people respond to, and I think this is why we get the attention that we do get. Literally, I would say there's somewhere between 3 to 6 borders per issue that we all do. Typically what we'll do is me and Dustin will split the efforts on that. I'll do like 3 borders, Dustin will do 3 borders, we'll put everything together, and that's how that works out. But typically, to actually construct a border, to actually draw one out, and I'm like really meticulous about it. Like, I use rulers, I use protractors, I use fucking stencils, I use like the whole fucking nine. It takes usually around 4 to 6 hours to draw each border, probably, for me personally. And then you add up, so that's like 12 hours for me on my end, 12 hours on Dustin's end, just to draw the borders out. As far as like constructing, like, that's more than likely that's the hardest part, and that's like the longest part of putting this stuff together, aside from actually assembling the pages and putting them in order and uploading them and all that stuff, which is like another, you know, altogether 3 weeks of doing stuff, gathering submissions, all that stuff. And it takes, I think that's what puts us apart from everybody else, is the extra 4 to 6 hours that we put on our borders, the extra 4 to 6 hours that we put on our covers, because we do all our covers ourselves, basically, except for the one that you and Madeline, of course, helped out on. I really love that cover. Thank you very much for that, sir. Mm-hmm. But, like, if you take into account the extra hours that we put into each and every issue, I'd be honest with you, I've been in this little independent press scene for a long time, and I read a lot of these different magazines out there, and I'm not downplaying their work or their quality in any regard whatsoever, but I don't see the extra attention there. And I feel like that's what sets Clefjaw apart from a lot of the other magazines, is because we're down to pay that extra attention to things. That and LSD or things like that, but no, I mean, like, and that's why I feel like people respond to us, as far as like gathering people, as far as like getting people under like one flag. Me, myself, and Dustin, you know, we had a keen eye right from the start. You were talking about like from the beginning, it started off like really all inclusive, and then it just slimmed down a little bit more and a little bit more. Me and Dustin have like a certain eye for writing. We both read a lot of the same authors. And what we're trying to put across to people is that there's a new aesthetic out here in the world of art and the world of literature that allows for the coexistence of the ugly and the beautiful together in one big fucking thing. You don't always have to make art a masterpiece, is what we're trying to put people across. You don't have to make art a masterpiece, but it has to say something. That's what art is about. Art is about saying something. It's not about making something beautiful. It's not about wrapping it in a fucking box and putting a fucking ribbon on it. It's about what's inside of it. And what we try to do is we try to put that across with this aesthetic that we're working on called Transcendental Realism, which is an all-encompassing style that incorporates styles like infrarealism, surrealism, Dadaism. I guess you could call it postmodernism, but we really hate that fucking term. And all that stuff. Does that make sense?
Awesome.
At all?
Absolutely. That makes perfect sense. Well, I mean, like, not enough people are too concerned with scenes and movements as a whole as well. There's a big, big thing going on in this country, especially in the underground art world, of just, like, unadulterated narcissism in a lot of ways, and pandering. And that's one thing that I do love about Clefjaw, is that you don't pander to anybody, nor do you give a shit what other people think about you, but you respect.
Yeah. I mean, we don't sign our artwork, man. We don't sign our fucking art pieces. You don't know who's doing what page or anything like that, because we don't give a fuck if we're getting credit for it. It's not about, for us, it's not about the artists. It's about the art, and it's about what you're fucking bringing to the table. It's not about, like, how many fucking magazines you've been published in. I could care less if you're a fucking major seller or if you've won, like, a fucking pushcart prize or whatever. My biggest concern is, like, what do you have to say that's worth a shit, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah, and I mean, like, that is something that is just so fucking rare, and it needs to not be rare at all. It needs to be, like, the norm. Like, there needs to be separation between, you know, and I mean, like, also, like, where as artists would you or I be without as many rejections and things as shit as both of us have gone through in those literary scenes, you know, and in, like, those art world scenes? Because, like, art is, like, the most fucking goddamn subjective thing that's ever existed. And to say that every artist doesn't have an audience, you know, is ignorant in so many ways. Like, there is an audience for everything. Definitely. I don't know.
Oh, there is.
A little high.
No, there really is, man. And unfortunately, a lot of times, what is the trend, and or at least from what I've seen, the trend is like, people will garner a lot of attention sometimes, and, you know, the craft starts to suffer because of it. And unfortunately, that's something that I'm really concerned with the onset of social media and the way that writers and artists associate with their audience, and what you're talking about there is, like, it's created this whole illusion of celebrity status that makes the artist more important than the art. And that's exactly what we're fighting against, man. That's exactly what we're fighting against. So in a way, like, the audience can be really detrimental sometimes. And that's not to say that we don't want a fucking audience. I mean, of course we do. Everybody does. But what we want our audience and what we want our, you know, readers to understand about us is that what you're getting from Clefjaw and what you're getting from authors and artists at Clefjaw Press is what they say. It's not who they are all the time. It doesn't even have to be who they are. It could be just what they fucking want to bring to the table. And sometimes, you know, it might be from somebody that's, I think our age range at one issue was like 15 to 54 was the age range in that. It might be some kid in middle school that just wrote a really great paper and threw it to us and was like, hey, can you guys publish this? Oh, fuck yeah, I'll publish it if it's fucking good, man. Like, I don't care. You know what I mean? Like, I could care less what your credentials are. I really could care less what people's credentials are. And, you know, that's one of the big things that we get. Like, when we do submission calls and everything like that, we tell people, you know, you don't have to include your bio. And, you know, it happens every time. You're going to have, like, five or six people that will not read the submission guidelines, and they'll send us their bio and tell us all the awards that they've fucking been published for or been nominated for and what have you. And, frankly, that's a turnoff right from the jump. Whatever you brought to the table after that, if you started off your submission telling me, like, how great you are, more than likely, I'm just going to tell you, you're not going to get in. More than likely. There's, like, a 95% chance you're going to get rejected. Unless you got something really good.
Definitely. Well, yeah. And I mean, like I was just saying, that's how it should be. And there are, and what you're saying about the instant gratification, like, man, like, I've run a blog now for 5 years, and a good portion of the early shit that I put on there was exactly that. It was shit. And, you know, in a lot of ways, some of the stuff that I still put on there is shit. And it's not that, you know, like, I'm even looking for gratification from it. It's just kind of like a process that gets worked through. Whereas there's a lot of people that I know who will post things that they write seconds after, you know, onto Facebook and tag X amount of people in it, 25, 50 people, and be like, hey, give me to read this. And, yeah, half the time it is just, hey, give me another pat on the back, give me some more gratification so I can feel good about my day. Not so I wrote anything of substance or created anything of substance, just literally for gratification and literally so I can feel better about myself. And, like, honestly, that's your motivation in art. Like, you're not really truly understanding the therapeutic nature of art as a whole. Like, it is...
Yeah. Well, actually, I mean, if you think about it, for them, that's, like, that is their therapy for them. That's the way that they cope with a lot of, you know, like, sometimes that might be the way that they cope with certain things. That might be the way that they cope with personal problems, is to, you know, post that. And fucking God bless them for doing that. And you guys are, there, like you said earlier, there's an audience for everything. So more than let them have it. Yeah, like I say, I say let them have it. We're not out here to, like, as Clefjaw, we're not out here to completely squash everybody. We know that, you know, there's going to be presses out there that we don't like, and there's going to be presses out there that don't like us. And obviously there's fucking plenty of goddamn room in this, like, big cybernetic jungle or whatever the fuck you stupid metaphor that you want to throw at it. But what we do want, and what we want everybody to understand, is that there's a different way of doing things. And as far as... God damn it, I'll say it. Like, Clefjaw wants to be the best. We want to be the goddamn best. And we're out to do it. And all you other presses out there, I'm just going to serve you notice. We're out to be the best. So I hope you guys have your game tight. For real.
Badass fucking macho man call out right there.
I will. Like, I will straight up tell everyone. I'm just, like, it's not being vain or anything. Like, that is just our goal. We are out to be the best and the most original, and we're going to do it, and we're going to keep fucking pushing. And,
well, and
we're
going, like,
to keep
honestly,
pushing everybody.
I would hope that anybody who creates art, like, feels that way, too, in their craft. Like, you feel like you want to be the best or do the best that you can all the time.
Do the best that you can at it, you know what I mean? Like, maybe I'd say be the best is, like, not the right term, but I feel like it is, because that's my personal goal, is, like, I want, for me to do my best is to be the best for me, and I'm going to be the best at this. I want to be the fucking, like, I want to be involved with the goddamn best press in the fucking world, and for me personally right now, Clefjaw Press is the best goddamn press in the world.
Well, you should, I want to ask you about APC, because you released that a couple months ago now. When did you release that? Yeah.
Yeah, I released that back in January, actually.
And that is by yourself. And it is, I don't have a personal copy, but I definitely got to flip through DH's copy. And that is that's a hell of a book, my friend. Hell of a book.
Oh, thanks. Thanks, dude. I've gotten, like, zero feedback on it. like besides,
really?
Like, Dustin and whatnot. Well, I mean, I've sent out, like, some copies and stuff like that, but I don't really chase feedback. I give people shit as, like, the head editor of Clefjaw Press about promoting their own books, and then I put my own book out, and it's like, well, I've got to concentrate on everybody else's book right now. I can't do this shit. And, like, I started to, like, really push it, and I still do. Like, I'm still out there, and I'm still trying to promote it. I go to, like, readings all the time, and I take my book with me, and, you know, I try to push it, but that book, man,
well,
you were talking earlier. I mean, you were talking earlier about our share of rejections and how, like, we wouldn't be where we're at. That book wouldn't exist if it hadn't been for, like, some sort of, like, pseudo-rejection that I got from another press. So, you know. And I thank God every day, because that book was done exactly the way I wanted to do it, and I've seen the product that the other press has put out lately. I'm sorry, man. Like, I just don't, like, create space, you know, regulated photos. I don't like CreateSpace photos that you could just download from fucking CreateSpace, you know? And some of these presses just like to slap that shit on a fucking cover and throw, like, some cheesy title, like an itemized list title, like Roses and Woodstone or fucking lipstick and bullet phrase. And I don't know. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
But like,
the goat.
No, yeah. Yeah.
Shutterstock.
Right. Shutterstock and stuff like that. You know, like, that's cool, man. Like, you can go to places like that, but, like, for me, putting out that book was, I got to do the cover for it. Dustin, like, got his brother to do the back cover of it. Dustin himself, like, assembled, like, everything about that book. He did the editing on it, which he did a fucking fantastic job on the editing. It wouldn't have come out any better if it had been coming out by, like, somebody, even, like, Grove Press or whatever, man. I don't care who it is. Like, it wouldn't have been any better for me. And that was my first major poetry collection. It's 126 pages, I think, something like that. And or 110, yeah. So I've got some of it here if you want to hear it. Or
yeah, no, I would love if you read from some APC. I think that would be great.
All right. Well, I'll go ahead and I'll tell you, like, you read the copy that Dustin had, and obviously it was my copy, because I gave it to him. So I've got, like, one poem that I had included in there with me right now, and then I guess I'll read that one. I've switched over into this whole, like, I don't know, like, I'm not even really writing poetry at the moment. I've switched back into doing prose again, and I'm trying to finish this novel that I'm working on and do all this other cleft jaw-related stuff at the same time. So for me, like, you know, I don't know about you, but in Galaxy versus Sabretooth, like, reading over books and stuff like that after you've written them, and it's been a couple of months, it's always, like, kind of offsetting. But this is one of the better moments for me. This is actually about a time where we were all hanging out and we were working on Cleft Jaw number 5, actually. Or 4. I'm sorry, we were working on number 4. This is called Scab Kids. Scab Kids share buddy cop moments with the parallel versions of themselves. The red, obsessed Thoreau critic, survivalist he is, can eviscerate a flock of sheep with the energy in the attic and a rusty paint knife. His partner, an infant keen on looking at the crime scene through the dyed fibers of his new favorite sweater. Some moments break down, interrogation scenarios with no one under suspicion per se, so much as to say they want to find the reason why staring in the mirror is fascinating for one and agonizing for the other. Kid A respects the nature of nihilism. Nailing down a distinct career path is second nature when he's on the floor, fascinated by the marshmallow smile of pink acid Jesus, whose eight-ball bottom has indecipherable answers for every possible query. Kid B recognizes his doppelganger as more of a two-degree twist on his adopted archetype, a big baby with half a beard comforted by extroverted displays of how to be fantastic and awkward and carefree on the rooftops, Voorhees winter cutting off the circulation to the mauve pulse, the prominent clue. And that's the end of that.
Well, yeah. God, I love your fucking work, Frankie. It's like,
thanks.
Reminds me of a boxing match. Just like well placed punches and flurries, and then, you know, a couple of hits to the body, and then a couple of jabs to the face. Like, every time.
Nice. Every time. I like to think of my poems like Jake LaMotta fights, so
yeah,
that's fun. Yeah, lots of punches to the body, sir. Jake LaMotta was like a real body puncher. He loved to work the ribs and what have you, so it's good stuff.
Then do you have another one?
well, I don't have one from that book anymore. Like I said, Dustin's got my copy of it. I do have my very first poetry book that was put out by Crisis Chronicles Press.
Please,
you want to hear some of that?
Absolutely.
All right, man. To be honest with you, I read this book today, and like, I was really like bitter about a lot of bullshit during this time. I think I've said this before in like a previous interview. about like how bitter of a person I used to be, and it really showed in my earlier work, and it definitely showed in the Anarchist Black Book of Poetry, which, like I said, was released by Crisis Chronicles Press back in like April of 2012, I think. This poem was like a four-part poem, I split it into four parts. It was actually an epic poem that I wrote at a duck pond, and it's called Streets of the Panamericano Nightmare. Get a drink of tea real quick here. I'm all parched, man. Fucking cottonmouth. Jesus Christ.
Yeah, dude. I got this San Pellegrino I'm nursing in here. Just trying to stay hydrated.
Well played, sir. This is part one. It's called Border Town. Let's see. There are 1 million salmon skulls that live in the folds of silver hands. Golden brain matter where gold really matters. New age tragedies are playing out in my nightmares, and my insecurities making a mule of ambition, smuggling the goods through a traffic tunnel from immediate family to ancestral preconception. Isa chingao, such breeding is a predestined question mark that has been itself into an obtuse angle, standing next to a sign that says, rest stop. The theories on virtue and free death are being smuggled in from a cartel of nihilistic endeavors. The words, beware the hermit, and if you wrong him, kill him, are being melted into a silver spoon. A sense of overpowering lust is being loaded into a hypodermic and inserted into the varicose veins of a distant future. I wake up with the overwhelming sensation of a frosty shade of sky blue. I am aware and have never had to shit so bad in my life. A costume once belonging to an action figure packaged in plastic and calling itself the Overman is found in the back of the toilet floating just above the plug, before losing itself in the current between brown water and brain matter, between truth and wishes, between dreams and an honest living. An innate obsession with cannabinoids and caged violence is reviewing an itinerary for me that spans the next 20 years. A dark baby boy has been born in the farthest depths of information, where long-forgotten salmon skulls are slowly shaped into marzipan and sold in the costumed streets of Dia de los Muertos. While I attempt to pull apart silver-clenched hands, brute force, and lethargic posture patrolling Los Burros de Border Town, the real border that's receding too fast in order to construct a proper wall to keep them in, el freaks y la tools. Something of a mystery has latched onto a vial of wisdom. An iota of hope has purchased a small room somewhere, very, very close, and while it stares into the darkest reaches, it dreams of cat turds and rose beds and green excrement hanging from open window sills. On the freak side of town, shrewd silence is tickling my funny bone when someone on the fence speaks up about corporate downsizing and Proposition 19, which I'm sure that you're more than familiar with, Mr. William Sewer Bonney.
I am. I am very, very familiar with Prop 19.
Right. Yeah.
One of my favorite poems.
That was like a...
I give it props.
Yeah, that was a really angry poem. And I wrote that at a fucking duck pond, man. Like, I was, like, really angry at a duck pond. You know what I'm saying? Like, just angry.
That sounds like I take walks pretty much every morning, and for whatever reason, all over Denver and Lakewood area, there are so many duck ponds and so many geese ponds. And I take these walks because I'm a pretty angry dude, and I wake up kind of angry, so I feel you, dude. I have had more than my fair share of angry moments at a duck pond. And it is
Thank
one
you.
Of those places where it's like, you're like, man, fuck these ducks. They're happy as shit, and that's fucking dumb as hell. You know, like...
they're so fucking happy, man, you know? And, like,
yeah, dude,
being
like,
if you're in an angry mood or you're an angry person, like, you kind of resent the ducks for being happy. It's fucked up
exactly.
a little bit, but it's true.
How are you... Are y'all not pissed off that there's, like, construction going on across the street and there's fucking cars everywhere and there's fucking miasma of fucking pollution hanging over the city? Come on, ducks.
Yeah.
Not all breadcrumbs and fucking rainbows, bros and sisters.
Yeah, I don't get angry at the duck pond anymore. I just want to clarify that. I take bread to the duck pond now. That's what I do.
That's good. I think I might,
take
that, I might have to take that.
You should pick that habit up.
You have to take that habit on. Really, really take some bread and toss it around to the ducks. That'll make me feel better.
I think it will.
Definitely.
Yeah, hell, if you get mad enough, you could eat the bread in front of the ducks, and then you really feel good about yourself.
Yeah, well, I might get arrested. Denver has like 8 or 9 different kinds of police forces. I swear to God. There's always new types of police forces popping up. We've got like Homeland Security police force and like Federal Reserve police and police, and then the state police, and then there's a town called Edgewater, which in the middle of Denver, it's 8 blocks long, and it has fucking, like, 5 or 6 police vehicles with, like, AR-15s in them. The city is crazy.
You're all copped out in Denver.
They're copped out, dude. Well, they're like, a couple years ago, they're like, you know what, let's legalize weed, get everybody super high, and then just have, like, 9 police forces to fucking fuck around.
Makes
everybody
it easier.
So high that they don't care. Yeah, exactly. They don't care. It's just riding bikes, getting high. And I'm a part of that, so whatever. What are you gonna do?
Happens, bro. Fucking happens. Shit. Goddamn cops, man. Like, to be honest with you, last time I was in Denver, I was, like, hanging out on the corner of the Mercury Cafe, which is where that event is going to be at, May 23rd. And I was, like, smoking a bowl, like, right there on that little stoop. Like, they've got the logs and the little table there, and it's, like, you could just sit down on the fucking stumps. You know what I'm talking about. And, yeah. And I was sitting there, like, smoking, and, like, a fucking cop, like, just rode right by me and tripped me the fuck out because it didn't say shit. Just walked right by me.
Yeah.
I was like, I'm in.
That was actually the night that I showed up. If this is the same night that I'm thinking, was that the, I showed up high
on
LSD.
That's the one.
I've been trimming weed all day, so I just smelled like weed. And what was that, Epic Rights? Was that an Epic Rights press?
Oh, no. I would not attend one of those events, but
unlike the story, that's what it was. I was way too high. And I think I had eaten some edibles, too. It was a hell of a night. I actually ended up going back home, watching some X-Files and crying because the X-Files episode was so trippy. And it resonated with me deep in my heart.
I can see that. X-Files would be really cool. Yeah.
Dude, I understand Mulder and Scully on a different level. I don't know how to
you
put
feel
it.
Them on a, like a, like a biological level, is what you're saying. Like.
a cosmic level, bro. Like,
oh, okay.
Stardust
okay.
shit. Well, we all should, right. And Mercury Cafe also, for our listeners out there, don't drop acid and go to Mercury Cafe because I always forget that there's a wizard who does tarot readings and sells tea and walks around.
I've seen that guy.
Yeah, and
he's a great guy.
He's a great guy. Sweet dude. But, man, on a head full of acid, that can really, really get to you. And you can be like, oh, my God, there's a wizard. And
I got to
run. Really, yeah, you, I mean, like, that is, there's not been too many times in my life that I've been on LSD and a wizard has come into focus. But I feel like that's a flight moment. That's a fight or flight moment. And that's definitely a flight for me. Because I'm not trying to fight a wizard. Like, that's just illogical. I have, like, some, if I have, like, Buffy the Vampire Slayer's, like magical slayer axe, maybe I'll go fight a wizard. But other than that, no.
I got into this, like, whole phase, like, not long after that about, like, painting, like, black magic practitioners and wizards with buck teeth and shit like that. yeah. I know what you're talking about, bro. I feel it.
I don't blame you, man. Like, it's real out there. It's a real world out there. But speaking of this reading, May 23rd, we've got some really amazing all-stars.
Oh, yeah.
Lined up. Like, I mean, your lovely wife, Lindsay.
That's the all-star right there.
Yeah. And the other, you know, the all-star point guard, Dustin Holland.
Mr. Prodigy himself. He hates that
Mr.
word,
Prodigy,
but I love to call him that.
He is, man. I mean, he's you talk to the kid, and I mean, he's been doing this longer than, I mean, I have, that's for sure. And he does way more than I've ever dreamed of doing. And you just gotta have so much respect for him. MJ Taylor, who you said you're gonna be releasing a new book called Rattled.
Yeah, we'll
right?
have some. Yeah, we're gonna have some copies that weekend, actually. So.
Oh well, awesome. Oh, you know what? Actually, the Prodigy has called. The Prodigy has called in himself. Dustin Holland, are you there?
Oh, shit.
Hey, gang.
What's up, dude?
Whoa.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Good, man. How the fuck are you?
What's up?
I fucking love this kid, man. I really do. I love this kid to death.
I love you guys.
He's so fucking positive, man. He really is. He's, like, probably the most positive fucking person in the world, I swear to God.
Aw, thanks. I just, you know, I'm feeling naturally positive about it. You guys are talking about fighting wizards and poetry and all that shit.
Fucking A.
Are you pumped for this? Who, okay, Dustin, quick question. So
good
I know
question.
That you're pumped
Flow in.
To see MJ Taylor, Lindsay, Frankie, and myself read. Who else
yeah.
are you most pumped about seeing reading?
Well, I'm really excited for another editor on the Cleftjaw staff who's a newer member of the editorial staff named Gabriel Ricard. He's going to be motherfucking awesome, and Frankie's been editing a book by him for Cleftjaw for a while. I'm really excited to read with Nick Everett, because she used to be a bookstore owner here in Longmont, actually, and we were all going to do a big reading with her, and, you know, for various reasons, mostly financial and travel-related, it didn't end up coming together, so finally can do a reading with her. Let's see, Paul Konecki, who, if I'm not mistaken, is involved with Mad Squirrel down in Texas, will be
yep.
there. Nate Maxson, who's
that kid's
a badass
awesome.
Motherfucker.
Yeah.
You know, also, there are definitely two other acts I'm excited for. One being my older brother, Nicholas Holland, is going to be doing his clown act, which I think is going to be motherfucking cool as hell. And a very good friend of mine named Connor Magyar, who performs music under the title First in Maine, will be singing songs and doing cool shit.
I thought it was Fifth in Maine, actually.
First in Maine.
Is it First in Maine?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, you're right. Sorry.
I apologize if at any point I've said Fifth in Maine.
No, you're good.
Okay.
We're also releasing a record by that guy, right?
We sure are. Six songs. It's going to be... It's actually, I talked to him last night, and we have a title confirmed. It's going to be six songs EP. He's got the first half of it recorded already. We have a track list down. I'm making the cover. It's going to be ill. If you will.
It will.
I will.
Sure will. Thank you for willing. God willing, and the
we're gonna have like T-shirts and shit too. We're gonna have like fucking stickers.
Oh yeah.
Like, what else? Yeah, man.
Books.
Fuck.
Fucking stickers. Business cards is a new thing that I haven't even told you about, Frankie. But
oh,
we're gonna have
awesome.
Them. Motherfucker.
Oh, isn't it? That's awesome.
That's really official.
Yeah,
it's
going right?
to be like an American Psycho moment. Everybody sitting around
oh, yeah.
carrying business cards.
Oh, yeah.
Can we do that?
Well, yeah,
can we have some
American
Psycho moments in the near future? Like, for real? Can we have
oh,
those?
Yeah. Well,
okay.
You know, it'll start with the business cards, and then it will
I'll make reservations
you know.
At Dorsia.
And then it'll go from, like, make reservations at Dorsia to be like, do you like Huey Lewis in the news? No, you know. People wonder why I was hiding a baseball bat behind my back, and the reading will end terribly.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, that would be a crazy fucking reading if all of a sudden, yeah, I don't know how it, phew, I'm glad I'm not taking acid for this reading. That's 100% confirmed. I will not be on LSD. I'll probably not be on any kind of hallucinogenic drug at all, to be 100% honest.
Can I be honest with you, Andrew? Like, that is hard to do a reading under the influence of that stuff. It's fucking hard. It is. It's really hard to MC a reading while under the influence.
I don't think I would be able to do that. I would not be able to do that. I would have left some point to go get some ice cream or something.
It's especially hard when there's children and knives around. And you're MCing a reading.
There were so many children. There were so many fucking children.
There were a lot of kids.
And Grammy poetry and children just don't go together. Well, fuck, Frankie, you remember the first reading that we did in the Happy Fucking Endings back in 2012?
Mm-hmm.
I think.
Yep.
Myself and Paul Corman Roberts both lost some liquor in the back room, in the green room, and it was full.
Oh, for reals?
Yeah, and both of us are just standing back there looking at each other like, oh my God, like, some of these 11 or 12 year olds have stolen our liquor. We have to get out of
God
here
damn.
Right now. Like, and, dude, I bolted out of that. And I mean, like, I don't think either of us said anything to anybody because he felt bad. I've been 12 before, and I didn't feel too bad, but I felt kind of bad. But what are you gonna do?
Wow!
You know? Like, who decided to book really underground poetry right next to like a children's recital? I blame the people
me.
In charge. Well, I don't blame you. You didn't book the children for after us. That
no, I didn't book
else.
The children for the after party. That's for sure.
Exactly.
Exactly. Yeah.
So they could have put a 30-minute window in between us and let us.
Right. Can we
get 5 minutes
to grab our liquor real quick so the 11-year-olds don't get trashed during their Christmas performance? Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's pretty tragic that you guys didn't, like, go to the children's recital. And not even go to it, but hang out with all of the parents while they were, like, waiting outside for it to start. Or right
they
after.
Were running us out.
Oh,
they ran us out of the building. I think Bill Gaynor took, like, an extra 30 minutes instead of the
God.
7 that he was allotted. And the woman is, like, literally staring at me and Brian, like, can you please get him off the stage? And I'm sitting here, like, giving the guy, like, so many cues, like, all right, guy, come on, it's time to wrap it up, and he's not picking up on it. And,
oh, my God.
He fucking, they literally ran us out of the building. Like, it was like he quits reading, and there's 30-second sprawl to the door to get out before the kids come in was what happened.
Pretty
that's what I feel like.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
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 Well, not to mention, Goldberg dropped Trow at some point during the reading as well.
I remember that. Yeah.
Front row, and I knew somebody was going to do it. Yeah, and that was.
I blame Brian Fugere for that. Thanks for starting that trend, bro. That's awesome of you. He did that to me in San Francisco. Like, I was reading during the Beast Crawl at Viracocha, and he goes on before me, and he pulls his pants down at the beginning of the reading and starts reading, and people are getting so angry. And, like, Lynn Alexander pulls him off stage finally. Like, she gets him to come off stage. It was a good reading. I enjoyed it thoroughly. And then I get up there, and I'm like, fuck you, Brian, for making me follow that. Like, and from then on, I swear to God, there's not been a poetry reading where somebody has not pulled down their pants. And majority of the time, it's been Steve Goldberg after that. I'll be honest, Steve likes to show himself. He's a voyeur.
That's not true. There were, everyone was fully pants covered, wearing pants in Albuquerque for things,
right.
For Halloween.
Well, that was
so
a cleft jaw event.
Yeah.
That was a cleft jaw event. Yeah. Yeah. That's a cleft jaw event.
We
keep
no
our pants on.
To do anything but keep our pants on.
Right. Yeah. We just keep our, pants on and we just fill our heads full of acid and play with knives and children.
And
because that's so much better than pulling your pants down. Yeah.
You know, in a lot of ways it is.
It is. It is. It's educational at least.
Yeah. Yeah.
Definitely.
Like what not to do. It's a what not to do class. Like, don't let your kids go to the poetry reading. That's pretty much the moral of that story.
First thing, don't go to poetry readings if you don't know who these poets are, because 90% of the time they're going to be some hoodlums, and really nice hoodlums who are going to be really respectful, but they're probably going to take off their pants and.
Yeah,
they're going to be on some sort of either hallucinogenic drug or alcohol or, you know, God knows what. Who knows? I dare to venture that there's other things going on.
Yep, there was. There was. Yeah, there was. But, you know, it was fun. I've been touring, or I've touring, god damn it, falling into my celebrity hood there for a minute. I've been, like, doing these readings I've been doing them since, like, 2011. And every time I go to these things, I find something new about these readings that I love and find something new about these readings that I hate. The biggest thing that I can complain about with readings are the pictures that are uploaded afterwards. I see 9 times out of 10, if you see pictures of a poetry reading, you see people staring at their shoes, you see people like staring at their phones, you see people with these stoic expressions where they're obviously bored or they're just like ready to read their own stuff and they're not even paying attention to like the person on stage. Can I just go ahead, and I'm just going to go on record and saying, if you guys are going to poetry readings out here anywhere, show the motherfucking reader on stage some respect. I've gone to a couple readings here in Albuquerque when I've seen people, like, get up there and really pour out their heart, like Nate Maxson, who's going to be reading in Denver, is one of these guys. I saw him pour out his fucking heart one night, and it was, like, some really good fucking shit. And the crowd, because it wasn't a slam poem, tuned the fuck out, for real. And, like, I just think, for me personally, you have all these people out here that are, like, taking the time, they're spending the money to go to these places and to, like, share their work and share who they are with these people, and I just think that there should be a little bit more respect shown to artists and the general artist community that are not musicians or what have you. Because it's hard to be up there and not know how to play an instrument. It's fucking hard. It's a lot of pressure, man. For me personally, like, I've been to places like Portland, and I've followed, like, a bunch of bands. One time, I followed, like, a shitload of bands, and I was the only poet there. And I got fucking heckled, like, out of that motherfucker, like, really bad. But, like, it was a good experience for me, because ever since that day, I've walked around with this, like, deeper notion of what it means to be respected as an artist, and I've also walked around with a bigger sense of self-appreciation for what I do. And I feel like the second message I want to get across is for the artists that get up there, no matter what the reaction is, just know that you got the fuck up there, and that's awesome. That's it.
KOS, that's for damn sure. Fuck yes, Frankie. Like we were saying earlier, audience for everything, and I mean, it just, if it matters to you, it matters, and that's all that matters, you know?
Right.
Like, I think
right.
That's the most important thing to get out to people is, like, yo, your feelings are fucking validated 100% of the time. If you feel like that, that's what it is, so.
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
There's, like, you know, you don't have to like everything. I'm not saying that. Just give them the respect. You know, shit. That's it.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
being really, I'm really glad both you guys came on tonight. Very cool. Very cool.
I'm glad you invited me, sir. This has been fun.
I'm glad,
yeah, dude.
That I remembered you guys were doing this and that I had a cell phone.
Me too. Really, I'm glad you popped on, DH. In fact, DH,
thanks for letting
you
me.
Should... Well, actually, you know what, guys? New thing that I've started since the show's all been redreamed up. It's an interview show. So I have some questions that I want to ask both of you guys. And
okay.
They're not normal interview questions. You know, they're pretty out there. So, all right. First question. Frankie, if you could go to any planet in our solar system, because I don't know any planets outside of our solar system. If you know any planets outside of the solar system that you want to go to, that's cool too. But what planet would you go to?
So it has to be in our solar system, right?
It doesn't have to be in our solar system, but I just don't know any other planets that aren't in our solar system. So if you know another one outside of the solar system, like its number or whatever, that's very...
Yeah, I would... I would totally go to live on Ego, the living planet, which is a living planet from the Earth 616 Marvel Universe, who's, like, he's got a beard and eyes that glow and everything like that. The reason I would go there is because I feel like that guy needs a friend, to be honest with you.
Whoa. Did Silver Surfer crash on him at
mm-hmm.
one point?
He sure did.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Holy shit, I think I read that one.
That's a good
That's
one.
A great,
it's a really good one.
It's a great one, yeah. Great.
They have a lot of great
wow.
dialogue in that issue. There's a lot of great back
yeah.
and forth between him and the Silver Surfer.
Very,
it's awesome.
Very existential comic book right there. Very,
yeah.
I mean, and as you, I think whenever we first started talking, Frankie, my name on Facebook was Norn Rad. Now is that
oh, yeah.
one of the reasons that we actually started talking. And that's
yeah.
fucking,
right.
oh, that's badass. All right, Dustin,
yeah, I would,
what halt? What planet are you thinking?
Me?
Yeah.
Well, if it's in our solar system, I think I'm going to go with Saturn, because those fucking rings are rad. And
oh yeah,
I feel like you could, like, get out and, like, hang your feet off the rings and drink your coffee in the morning, and the rings of Saturn would be, like, your planet's front porch. So that'd be pretty sick.
I like that.
And then, for out of the solar system, I'm going to go with, either you guys ever read that little book for, like, picture book for kids, The Little Prince by Antoine Saint-Exupéry or whatever?
Hell yeah.
Yeah. Well, Frankie, that'll change in May, because it's the best fucking book. But anyway, it's about, if you haven't read it, it's about this little boy and his, like, who meets a pilot who crash lands in the desert, and the little boy tells the pilot a story, and he talks about how he's originally from this planet where he had this flower that was his only friend, and he goes, I don't know, there's a lot of cool fucking planets in there that I think would be fun. Like, there's one planet that only has one, that, like, consists of a streetlight on a floating rock in space, and while the little boy was living there, it was his job to turn the light on at nighttime. And turn it off during the day. And I thought that was the coolest shit.
Hell yeah.
That is cool. I man, awesome. Thank you guys for going the extra mile on that question. Everybody else.
Thank you.
I think Saturn is honestly the most I keep waiting for Uranus and someone to like giggle afterwards. But that hasn't happened yet. Okay,
which one's the
question.
Oh, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh no, go ahead. What
No, I was just going to ask which planet it was that they found out wasn't a planet. I couldn't remember
Pluto.
That. Pluto, okay.
Pluto.
All right, that's all I needed.
But
no, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Apparently Pluto has water on it, so it might be a dwarf planet again is what the consensus now is, I think. But
yeah.
I might be wrong on that. So, and that's very interesting. We're all about science here on Live from the Jupiter Nebula.
Hell yeah.
I thought the weird thing was that, like, I thought for a while they were thinking that Pluto was a moon of something else that had, like, gone away.
That's a conspiracy theory. That is the David
right.
Icke. I don't know if that's actually just David Icke, but it's Nibiru. Nibiru would be the 10th planet on a, like a, I don't remember the exact name of it, but it's like on an trajectory orbit. So that's why Uranus's orbit is off by whatever, because Uranus has a really strange orbit too. And that's the explanation for it.
Right.
But yeah, huh. Something along those lines. It's Nibru is the name of the planet, Planet X. It's a very interesting thing to do some research into, for sure. It's I don't know about the validity of it or anything, and I don't necessarily believe that. But, you know, I don't know everything, so it's definitely cool to think about. But anyway, on to the next question. Frankie, if you were going to have some kind of superpower, what superpower would it be?
You know, I've thought about this question a lot since I was, like, fucking, like, 4 years old or whatever. And, you know, you got, like, the whole pantheon of powers, like telekinesis and pyrokinesis and what have you. Yeah, that's it. Like, pyrokinesis, man. Like, I was a pyromaniac when I was a kid. And, like, just being able to do that, but I would also, like, have, like, a subset power where I could, like, teleport, too. So, like, that would just be the biggest thing. Like, I want to be able to teleport from here to, like, Thailand and, like, hang out, maybe take some, like, Muay Thai lessons and shit like that again, and, like, teleport back here and set a building on fire, preferably a building that I don't like that is unoccupied. No, I mean, just start a fire in a dumpster. Right.
Yeah.
Dumpster fire.
Yeah, I almost gave myself away there, man. Goddamn, I almost let everybody know, like, I'm a sociopath a little bit. But, to be honest with you, like, no, it wouldn't even be those two things. Like, it really wouldn't. If I was going to, like, have a superpower for real, I would have, goddamn. Like, to be honest with you, man, I would want to be, like, able to morph into other people sometimes. Ever since, like, I was a kid, like, I have a problem with, like, people fucking staring at me or, like, taking notice of me in a crowd and shit like that. Like, I have, like, really bad social anxiety over, like, when people, like, really, I can't take compliments very well. I don't like, you know, I don't really take compliments that well. And I don't like a lot of attention shown on me most of the time, especially in public. Like, if me and the ex-girlfriend got in a fight in public or something like that, that was, like, the most horrible fucking thing for me. So, like, I would want to be able to, like, fucking just be, like, Mystique or whatever and, like, blend. You know what I'm saying? Like, I could change or, like, shapeshift or what have you. That would be cool. Yeah.
That would be really cool. BH?
Yeah.
Be awesome.
Dustin, what kind of superpower would you have?
So, do we get two?
Yeah, sure. Fuck, if you want.
Okay.
There's no limits to this.
I'd want invisibility for what you were talking about, Frankie, but also so that I could be, like, super sneaky, you know, sort of, like, you know, because sometimes the problem is, like, you know, you're backpacking in the backcountry and maybe you lied to the forest ranger about your itinerary so that you could go further into the desert and, you know, a park ranger finds you and gives you a ticket. You know, it would be nice to be invisible. Or, you know, if you're on mescaline and other people come up to you in the backcountry again and they're horse people, it would be nice to have invisibility. And then I'd also like super speed, but only if it came with super endurance so that I could get to places by running very quickly without being exhausted. Because I'd like to, you know, step outside and, like, jog over to you guys. But only if, like, it didn't tire me out as much as it would as a human running from Longmont, Colorado to Albuquerque or Denver. I think I'd also want, like, the endurance. Because otherwise I would just be, like, getting, like, in a lot of physical pain and exhausted much faster.
Yeah.
Wouldn't be as good.
Makes sense.
Definitely. No, that's a phenomenal answer. I don't know if
Thank you.
Enough people have thought that in-depthly about having super speed. If you don't have super endurance, you know, that definitely comes with time. So,
yeah.
Wow. Yeah, she just kind of blew my mind a little bit, bro.
Aw, thanks. What would your superpower be, Andrew?
Wow. No one's ever asked me this. Well,
bullshit. You don't hang out with the
well,
right
people. I mean, on the show.
Oh, okay.
I guess people have asked me this in reality.
Okay.
IRL, as it were. I think I would be able to surf the internet and be able to pop out of computers, like travel into computers, and then travel out of computers and be able to just travel through the World Wide Web, kind of like Reboot, if you've ever seen that show, or Lawnmower Man.
I was going to say, you're going to be the Lawnmower Man, basically.
Yeah, I would be the good Lawnmower Man.
Hell yeah. I love that movie.
Badass.
Such a great... So, you know what movie I bought yesterday on VHS tape, though, that I'm really excited about? The Craft.
What's that? Oh, yeah. I love that shit. It's so good.
The
Craft.
The Craft. That might be a little bit before your time, my friend.
I think it might be.
As
That's
it
awesome
says
movie.
On the box, it's Carrie meets Clueless. And I'm,
yeah.
I'm all about
what?
It. Dude, it's fucking
badass. It's really good. I haven't seen that fucking movie in so long. God damn it. Who was the girl in that? What is her name? Shit. It's like Faruza something.
Yeah.
It's some weird name that sounds like a vegetable.
It sounds like a made-up name, yeah.
Well, and it's just for beautiful. Yeah, Faruza Balk.
Yeah, that's her.
Faruza
yeah.
Balk, Rachel True. By the way, Dustin, this movie came out in 1996. I perpetually live in 1996. It is my favorite.
So I was 1 year old. Okay.
It's a good year.
I think I was 7, so it's not, you know. But
I was 13.
Neve Campbell, maybe one of my first real conscious crushes. Just a beautiful, beautiful woman. And Robin Tooney is the stars of The Craft.
Yeah.
And this is for you, Dustin. A newcomer to a Catholic prep high school falls in with a trio of outcast teenage girls who practice witchcraft, and they all soon conjure up various spells and curses against those who even slightly anger them. It's a great one.
Oh, I see
it. Yeah. I recommend it highly.
They take hallucinogens in that too, right? Like, don't they go out
yeah.
and, like, they get all fucking high and then they start casting spells and shit like that?
Yeah, it might be
yeah.
ecstasy. Something like that.
Yeah, I think they did do some, like, X or something of that. And they go out
yeah.
and
it's 90s.
Pray to the north
90s.
Winds.
It's, like, literally so 90s that it hurts, you know? Like, there's a few
yeah.
movies out there that are really 90s, but that one's right on top of the list. The Crow. Man.
Empire Records.
Oh, High Fidelity.
Yeah. High Fidelity, that's another one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very, very 90s movies. All right, and last question, and this is for both of you guys, but answer one at a time, because this is a passionate question. Where do you see Clefjaw going in the next couple years, or where do you guys want to, like, direct it?
Ooh. DH, you want to go first?
Okay. It's funny. Last night I was talking with my friend Connor, whose album we're putting out, and he and I agreed that if, like, in a year from yesterday, Clefjaw wasn't as big as it could have possibly been with, like, a year's worth of growth from wherever it was last night, that he would break my nose. And so, and I appreciate that.
Wow. That's motivation.
That's
yeah.
your friendship,
well,
too.
Yeah.
On a real
well, you
level.
Know, we were drinking and he was cutting my hair and we were talking about art and shit. And I don't know, I really believe that poetry, like contemporary poetry, is sort of in a strange place right now, because what's happened is that I think prior to the past, like, 50 years, what happened would be is that there would be a movement and a new aesthetic that would come by, and it would last for, like, 5 to 15 years, and then it would die off and something new would happen. But for whatever reason, the beats lived longer, and they were celebrated longer. And what's replaced that as a movement for, like, our generation is, like, this very strange, upsetting concoction of slam poetry and pseudo-academia. And so what I'd like to say in, like, 5 years would have the sort of stuff that not just Clefjob, but a lot of other people in our scene are doing, and have that sort of, give that aesthetic what Frankie and I call transcendental realism, to give that a little more validity and to bring that out into the world a little bit more would be kind of neat. But, I don't know.
Oh, yeah. This is very, I vibe with that, Frankie. You want to expand?
What that guy said, like, goddamn, that was like, that was pretty much like where I'm at. Yeah, like that's where I'm at. Like in a lot of senses, like it's just furthering transcendental realism. I will add on to the stipulation of if Connor breaks Dustin's nose, I have to break Connor's nose. So
yeah,
that's
but if
part
you break
of it.
Connor's nose, if you break Connor's nose, Jake will have to break his own nose.
Yeah, because my nose has already been broken, so it's already happened for me.
And then what will you do with your nose, Andrew?
My nose will be intact. No one will touch my nose.
Okay, cool. No, Jake's just hanging out in New York.
I fucked up my sinuses. Oh, I saw that he was in New York, or that some Clefjob books had made their way into the New York Public Library, which I was pretty excited about.
Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah, there's a photo of just him in the history section, and I think that's an appropriate place for him.
Yeah.
But the rate that you guys are releasing books to right now, that's just ridiculous. Are you going to continue at that rate, or are y'all going to slow down a bit, or?
God damn, as long as we can, like, as long as we can, you know, I'm fucking, like, swamped right now, bro, like, I'm not even playing. We've got Mick and Lindsay Thomas, who are editing Ryder Collins' poetry collection, which is coming out, we've slotted for somewhere, like, middle of the year, which that's going to be an incredible fucking book. We got Dustin editing currently an art book, which is like a compilation of himself, Lindsay. I kind of think of us like the Trinity of DC Comics, like Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman. You know what I'm saying? Like that's the way I like to think of it. So we should do something like that. But
are you Batman or Superman?
I'm always Batman, baby. I'm always Batman.
Okay.
All right. But like. Like, right now, that's going on, and then, like, I've got Carl Kowalski's book and Gabriel Ricard's book on my plate right now, as well as, like, writing my own, which is, like, a third one not coming out till next year.
I've got a couple poetry manuscripts, a prose novel of my own that I'm trying to work on.
See?
An EP. And in terms of putting out an EP, I just want to announce to the Cheeseburger Nebula right now, I do not know what I'm doing.
So as long as we can keep up that pace, you know what I mean, like where we don't know what we're doing and that we still want to do it, fuck, we're going to keep doing it. Yeah,
good.
I love the pace, that's like the most appealing thing to me is like we've only we've only been up and running like a little bit over a year, like possibly close to a year and a half at this point. And like I said earlier, man, we got 8 print journals and we've got 6 online issues. We're fucking gaining momentum too. Like I've got solicited manuscripts, like, and we've got other manuscripts on the horizon. We're out to be the best, man. Like I said, we're out to, everybody be on notice, we're out to be the best, and we're going to keep producing at this fucking rate as long as we can. So, and I feel like, I'll be honest with you, like, I see the community as a whole, and I feel like there's been a shift since we've came onto the fucking scene. I feel like there's been kind of a shift in the pace that people put out stuff because of, like, the pace that we're putting out. And that makes me feel really good, too, is that, you know, people notice the fact that we're, like, producing stuff every goddamn month. You know what I mean? There's only 2 industries in publishing that I can think of that do that. That's, like, newspapers and magazines, et cetera, and comic books. And that's exactly the kind of vein that we want to be in, is we want to be, like, major comic publishers, and we want to put something out every goddamn month for as long as we live.
Yeah, and that's...
Yeah.
I mean, that's fucking... That's legit as hell. That's too legit to quit, as one of my favorite poets of all time put it.
Too legit. I'm sorry. I was fucking hammering, dude. I'll fucking hammer right here on the floor. Like, I'm that excited about Clefjaw and where we're going. I wake up every day, and I'm fucking surrounded by, like, paintings by Dustin Holland and paintings by Lindsay Thomas and myself and Jake Rowinski, and I'm surrounded by, like, Clefjaw books and, like, old fucking, like, old borders that we have, like, that we recycle all the fucking time, we use over and over and over again. And every time I see, I can look back on every issue, man, and I can see a little piece of artwork from that issue laying on the floor, and my fucking heart jumps, dude. My heart jumps. That's how excited I am about it.
That's, I mean, like, that's the kind of thing that you want from anybody who's creating anything that you're listening to, reading, purchasing, you know, eating. In any kind of, like, situation, you want a person who, like, live, eat, breathe, shit, shave, showers, that. You know what I mean? Someone who, like, might have, like, a job to pay the bills and stuff like that, but their mind state is always on that grind. And, I mean, like, that's why I love you guys so much, is because that's how I am, you know? And that's what it's about, is, like, constant creation and constantly making things, not even for other people, just for yourself, and because you know you can, and because you want to, be the best, that strive to be the best, like, in any form or capacity that means, fuck yeah.
Yeah.
Fuck yeah.
God damn it, dude. You know, like I said at the top of the show, like, you know, I've been estranged from my kid for, like, a little bit over 5 years now, and like, I just don't really have a connection with my daughter that I fucking want to in my life. And I have turned that kind of attention towards Clefjaw at the moment. You know what I mean? Like, I still have everything to deal with there, but I have put just as much passion into Clefjaw as I have, like, I would raising my kid at this moment.
Wow.
And, yeah. Keeps me going, man. That's all. Like, that's it. Like, I'm Clefjaw till I fucking die, dude. And I'm getting, like, I'll get a tattoo to prove it. Or I'll, like, fucking make a blood pact over a goddamn Catholic school fucking witch pyre or whatever. You know what I'm saying? Like,
I
will do that shit.
I think that can be the tattoo. I think Catholic school, Clefjaw, witch pyre might be the tattoo.
I like it. Yeah. Yep.
Just a chess piece.
Fucking A. You know, we've been talking about, like...
Like, on my face.
We've been talking about, like, how we don't sign our paintings and how if we're going to do, like, shows and stuff like that, like, how we should, like, maybe figure out, like, a symbol to use. Like, Basquiat used his, like, crown or whatever like that. And we were like, throwing around symbols and stuff like that. And, you know, if you guys have read the issues, you know, you probably gathered that we like to use a lot of 666s and pentagrams and upside down crosses and what have you. and what we were pitching around the last time, it was like what, like the upside down cross with the crown over top of it, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. That's like something we were pitching, so yeah.
You know, and I've always found, I don't know if you guys are aware of this, but this just, both my parents ministers, my dad was a Catholic priest. The upside down cross is actually in a lot of ways a very, very religious symbol. It's what is
well, yeah, like
to
it's
St. Peter's
cross.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It's yeah, and I've always just felt that was just such an interesting thing too, that like that insignia does have like such a double connotation to it. And so
But there, there's like a lot of different symbols, like you're talking about. Like if you think about like the fucking swastika being a Navajo symbol for peace, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Instead of like what it was used for, it's just flipped up on its side. But you know, at Clefjaw for us, like the symbols that we use, like 666s and like pentagrams and upside down crosses. That's not, we're not fucking Satanists, you know what I mean? But we are against organized religion. We'll straight up tell you
that, man. Growing up in the fucking church was one of the most eye-opening experiences that I've ever fucking, I mean, it is a business at its very core, you know?
Yeah. It's a symbol for us. It's basically a symbol of, like, being against any sort of, like, system or group that incorporates individuals into their ranks through assimilation or propaganda. That's what that symbol stands for us. So, which, you know, a lot of times, unfortunately, that has to do a lot with Christianity. And that's, what's the opposite of Christianity? Satanic symbol.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Definitely.
I feel like Aleister Crowley, like, trying to, to like, justify the fact that I want to burn cats or something, you know? But I don't. I don't want to burn any cats. I just want to clarify that.
You know, I don't want to burn cats. Having said that, I don't draw nearly, I don't paint nearly enough paintings of flaming cats. And I say that mostly because I feel that it's true, and also because I did a painting of a car that was on fire, and I don't know, I just like drawing burning shit is something I've learned.
Yeah.
Hell yeah. Drawing burning shit, and burning shit, as we were talking about earlier. I mean, that's what life's about in a lot of ways.
That's that whole Dadaist perspective. I mean, that's just the whole Dadaist perspective that we have at Clefjaw, to be honest with you. We feel like, in a lot of ways, you got to burn the roots in order to start growing something, you know?
Yeah, I feel you on that. Well, I want to extend a very honest and heartfelt thank you to both of you guys coming on, Frankie, especially for being the featured guest tonight, and DH especially for calling in under your own accord, which is always nice. Fucking, and both of you guys are always welcome to call in. You know, I might be doing something to interview, but yeah, of course, yeah, call in whenever. And I'm really, really fucking excited to get to hang out with you guys in a couple weeks. Yeah, and drink a couple beers and trade books. I'm going to have copies of my new book, Studies, out there. So, Frankie, I definitely want to give you one to you.
Definitely. I want to trade. Fucking A.
And I'm going to have copies of your old book as well.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Cool.
There you go.
Well, I'll definitely have some moolah for you then.
That's all good.
Moolah, what?
Well,
we don't speak money at Clefjaw, bro. We don't speak money.
Which is all right. A shame. But
yeah.
We don't speak money with you, Andrew. At some point, we should learn to speak money with strangers.
Yeah, I think maybe at some point we should learn to speak pennies, maybe dimes, but, you know, keep your dollars.
Quarters, man. Quarters for laundry, at the very least.
And getting all complicated with quarters, bro.
Well, but thank you guys for coming on. It's been a fucking pleasure. And I'll see you both in a couple weeks.
Hasta luego, homie.
Yeah, absolutely.
Take care,
yeah.
Andrew. Take care, Frankie.
Yeah,
good talking to you guys.
Yeah, sail off into the sunset and shoot your six shooters and stuff into the air.
Pew, 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 pew.
Fucking love you guys, man.
Love
Laser.
You, Frankie. Laser. All right, now was the great Frankie Metro and the great Dustin Holland, both of Cleft Jaw Press, the co-captains. Next week, we are going to have Autry Fulbright from Annual Notice by the Trail of Dead, playing some of their John's going to be talking to the man behind Wizard Bong as well, Mr. Paul Wesley Langway III. And like I was saying at the top of the show, Earth Records is the music tonight. They have just released their new phone app, which you as an artist would be able to send in your music to get on the app. It's all just for DIY exposure for underground musicians, artists, and things like that. Reggie Waldo, who opened up the show, will be on the app, and you'll be able to, like, find his music. Christopher Prestigious, who is our next song, will also be on the app. Recommend you find his music as well. It's all very great smoky music. Which, obviously, here, live in the Cheeseburger Nebula, we are into illicit drugs. Here's some Christopher Prestigious.
What they spliffing on, that don't match equality. Bitches better not dare bother me. I'm so high up the pilots can't follow me. Let's go. First and foremost, shout out to Spitter and Raw Papers for my blunt smoking niggas purping the Garcia Vegas. Playing on the slots, we in Vegas. Presidential suite, my safe haven on the 515th floor, the sub top. Bad bitches coming up, rolling up off top. Bodies quiver from the feeling of exotic. Me and my nigga reminisced on what we spliffed prior. Reached the milestone of overachievement, what's acquired? High tolerance, smoke chronic till I'm tired. My desire, but pop champagne in the club like I'm wired. No undercover, no bugs on me. Fuck life struggles, find another one to bug, homie. It's medical, so I don't feel like no drugs on me. Let me in hell with real niggas or leave me by my lonely. Let me in hell with real niggas or leave me by my lonely. Zoning. I'm smoking Northern Lights. Shout out the Beast Coast. Sour diesel piffed as I sift through the northern nights. Supreme on my crew with crooks and you always shy of smoking mid-grade dope. Your OG ain't taught you right. Learn yourself about strenuous strands, continue with grams. Venues, casinos, and clamps. Third world poverty, while you in hell in Afghanistan, it's all dynamics. I take it all spiritual, most high. Placed it in my presence so it's literal. Fuck cops, trying to press the issue, it's not legal yet. Please stop with the controversy of politicals. Wonder why I don't give a fuck and I belittle you. Be surprised when I light cushion, get this revenue. Advanced intricate, mastermind another avenue. I'm on the next lucrative endeavor, now what haven't you? Paper roll, gold nuggets blaze while I'm in pursuit. Fortunate I have my own ways so I don't hinder you. Otherwise I am the influence to the miserable. Go.
That was Christopher Prestigious, Smoke My Weed. All right. Well, thank you for listening to another episode of Live from the Cheeseburger Nebula. I am, of course, your host, Dr. William Stewart Bonney. Keep it chill, America. I don't know what else to say.